entirety of Winning Time on HBO. I kind of want like an 80s Bucks story version with this music as like the opening credits. I don't know who'd play Marcus Johnson and who'd play Sidney Moncrief and who'd play Terry Cummings, Junior Bridgman, Brian Winters. But I know this guy would have a role in helping with the plots because he knows everything there is to know about the Milwaukee Bucks. You hear him on the Bucks Radio Network. Pre-game, halftime, post-game, Bucks talk, Bucks in 30, Bucks shots, Bucks house, where he gives you Bucks information and real estate advice. He is our Bucks buddy. He is Justin Garcia. Justin, good morning. How are you, pal?
Good morning, guys. Sign me up, too. I'm willing to play Brian Winters because I'm growing the hair out, and I've been kind of working on a playoff beard. We all, the three of us, Dave Kane, Ben Brust, and myself, said, let's grow playoff beards. And I think Ben shaved after a day, and Dave shaved as soon as we saw him come back from Chicago. So I'm the only one left standing now.
Wow. Well, we applaud your stick-to-itiveness. How do you think it's coming in? Patchy?
I think it's the usual. It's pretty good for like a 12th grader or 11th grader, but that's basically where I've popped out with my facial hair.
All right. Well, the Bucks win game one, but I saw a tweet from you that got my attention.
Uh-oh.
Now, again, I say this as someone who holds you in very high regard. But oh, no. The Bucks win game one, and you say that they are still the underdog in the series? Is that an accurate depiction of what you wrote on the Twitter machine?
Well, I didn't say they were for sure. I said I would assume the Celtics are still favored. I haven't looked up. That's not really my area of expertise on the gambling side of it. So I'm not sure if that's the case. But, I mean, typically we've seen it before where the Bucks lost game one against the Celtics and they were still favored to win that series. Obviously, it's a lesser scale, but losing game one of the series against the Hawks last year, they were still favored there. And I think it's just, you know, it shrinks the margin for error for the Boston Celtics. But coming in, they were prohibitive favorites. So you don't typically see swings on those lines unless it's a major, major blowout or there's an injury that occurs, which kind of swung what we saw in game one against the Nets last year. Or if you get to two wins, that's when things can start to shift. So I would assume it's narrowed it, but I would guess the Celtics are still favored to win the series.
I thought I saw Homer tweet something today that the Bucks have actually flipped the script and are now favored, but I'm not going to look deeper into that. Homer is my fact checker, so take that for what it's worth. I mean, is there anything you could say about Giannis that would exemplify how great he was yesterday? Because you don't have Chris Middleton. Everybody's talking about the Boston Celtics. They're hot. You got Tatum, the best player in the NBA. Is it possible Giannis is still underrated because of what he did yesterday, even with getting in foul trouble, to throw a triple-double at the Boston Celtics? And not it seems like he still doesn't get the love nationally. And I think it's because he's such a great dude and everybody loves him that doesn't sell as much. Am I crazy?
I think it's a couple of things. I mean, look, this is, for whatever reason, I think there's a couple of things that go into it. And yes, I do think he's underrated in that he basically single-handedly won game one of that series. And everybody pointed to, well, if Chris Middleton's out, Giannis has to be great. And we kind of said this going in of we being basketball fans and people following this of, well, Giannis is going to have to be the best player on the floor for the Bucks to win this series, as if that was, you know, some large stretch of the imagination. It's right. Like going into a series with Tim Duncan in his heyday and say, well, the Spurs are going to have any chance, Tim Duncan has to be the best player on the floor. You know, 9 times out of 10, he's going to be. So I think that's what we saw yesterday. And the other thing is, it's been very interesting through the years that for whatever reason, and I've seen people have speculated that it's just, well, he wasn't part of the AAU circuit, and during All-Star weekend, and you know, he's not necessarily hanging out with the rest of the players. He's not playing for Team USA and getting in that atmosphere, that he's just kind of been, I don't want to say rejected, but not fully embraced by the rest of the superstars there, where you kind of have your cliques. There's always been this weirdness between he and LeBron James. I mean, Kevin Durant is really the first guy that's embraced him and pointed out, hey, this guy's really good. So I think that's part of it, too, that you know, you don't have the other stars across the league necessarily touting, wow, he's the greatest, like you would hear with LeBron and with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. So I think that kind of goes a long way in shaping the narrative about what type of player he is. But, you know, the other thing, too, is who are the players we fall in love with and point to as the best? It's usually LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, guys that hit jump shots. And Giannis has gotten better there. But for so long, it's been, well, you got to hit shots in the playoffs. You've got to be able to create shots. And that's true. But Giannis is just creating them in different ways, and he's getting better at that component. But because he's not a lethal shooter like Kevin Durant is or Steph Curry, and the improvements LeBron showed, I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, no doubt. I agree with that. It just feels like he's still, and I know he gets the love here. We all appreciate and love him, but it just feels like he's not dramatic enough to get that national attention. All right, is this the defense that we can expect the rest of the way in Brook Lopez doing what he's doing? Because Boston has been awesome on offense. Yesterday, the Bucks defense smothered. Is this the way the Bucks are going to win this series, is by continuing to hold Boston down, or do you expect Boston to shoot it better? Was yesterday how the blueprint for what you think the Bucks need to do?
Well, it's a blueprint. It's a defense you can expect. I don't know if it's the results you can necessarily expect, and I think we've talked about it before, the whole shot quality Twitter account that's out there where they basically analyze the shot selections and, well, normally this shot would fall X amount of times and, you know, this team would win. We referenced it in the finals and in the conference semifinals against the Nets where the Bucks put together these games, they still lost, and tonight I felt pretty good about that. And shot quality would show, well, you know, 9 times out of 10, 8 times out of 10, the Bucks actually win this game. They still won the game based on shot quality's metrics and data from yesterday's game. It was closer. I think it by their numbers, it should have been 103-98, something like that. But they still won the game, and I think that's the encouraging part is, look, this is what we have to do. Now, I've seen people say, well, Boston's just not going to shoot that way going forward. I don't totally disagree, but it is worth pointing out, this kind of is who the Celtics are. They shot 36% on threes in the regular season. They shot 35% on threes against a much worse defense in round one. They shot 36% on their threes yesterday. And the Bucks, kind of the same thing. They were a 37% shooting team from three in the regular season. They're 35% yesterday. So you can't really point to yesterday and say, well, the Bucks had their role players just go off. Grayson Allen hit early threes. This wasn't a 6 or 7 3-pointer game for Grayson Allen or Pat Connaughton. It was their defense. And the biggest thing to me is I think you can and should expect that type of 3-point shooting for the Celtics going forward. They gave up 22 wide-open threes, which I think is 6 feet of separation or more, is how the NBA views it. So basically, here, take it. We don't care. 14 of those were from Al Horford, Derek White, and Grant Williams. Those are the guys the Bucks want to shoot, and they force them into taking those. The Celtics only made 8 of those 22 wide-open threes, but only one of those looks went to Jason Tatum. So the Bucks clearly said, those three guys, we'll let take whatever they want. Peyton Pritchard's another one who took a lot of threes, and a lot of them were lightly or uncontested. There's a lot of guys on the Celtics team that you pointed to and you said, do it in the postseason. But we know Tatum can do it. We know Jaylen Brown can do it. Marcus Smart, I think, is another one. They're willing to say, we'll give you a high volume of threes because we don't trust you to consistently make them. And Al Horford's the biggest one. From the onset, the Bucks were saying, go ahead and take those. We think over time, those percentages are going to drop. Grant Williams shot 41% on threes in the regular season. But look, we saw that a couple of years ago with the Bucks, where you had players that were shooting on a high percentage. It's just different in the playoffs because of that. The teams are willing to help off of certain players and say, over time, you're not going to hit a high volume. You're not going to match what you did in the regular season. We just need to focus on these guys. And that's what they did. So I think you can expect to see that high volume of threes going forward. The Bucks are 11-1 this season when the opponent takes 48 or more threes. And they're saying, take these threes. We're limiting who we want to take them, but we're also taking away everything around the basket. And what I'd be most startled by if I'm the Celtics is they took two mid-range shots total from Tatum and Brown yesterday. And these are guys that basically took a third of their shots during the regular season in the mid-range. So they should have taken at least 10. They took one total, and the Bucks did the exact same thing they did against the Bulls and DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, where it was, we're going to fight through screens. We're not going to switch. We're going to be tough at the point of the attack. We're going to pick you up full length of the court. We're going to push everything to the left and force you to take contested jump shots. And for the Celtics, that is a rude awakening to go from a comically bad slash disinterested defense in the Brooklyn Nets to what the Bucks did to them yesterday. And I do think it's worth pointing out, the Bucks had a pretty good training ground for this, to play DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine for five games in the first round and then go into a much better version of that. But still, they got to do that for five games. They're ready to go. Celtics did not face anything close to what they're seeing from the Bucks in the first round.
This is why we love your insight, man. This is why you're here. This is why the folks that tweet me wanting more Bucks talk need to make sure that they catch you whenever you're with us. Because otherwise you get questions like the last one that I'm going to ask you, which is Marcus Smart still alive? Because I didn't get to watch the second half, and the way I watched him leave the floor, I thought someone had taken a shot at him. Like he was winged in the shoulder by some sort of sniper, because I've never seen anybody leave the court that way, and then apparently he returned in the second half all good as new, just fine.
I was stunned. I was 0-for-2 yesterday, because the Marcus Smart thing, you hate to speculate on injuries, but it looked like he separated his shoulder, and if that's the case, good luck for the rest of the series. And then all of a sudden you see reports it's a shoulder stinger and he's expected to return, and you're thinking, how is that what I saw 10 minutes ago? But the other one, the worst one for me, was the Robert Williams one, where he just got kicked in the groin, but he was out for two possessions and barely moving. That the way it looked at first, I thought he tore his groin, that he was not getting down the floor. He stayed on the other end of the floor. He wasn't contesting anything and couldn't move. And then you see all of a sudden, okay, I'm fine to go. That's from getting kicked in. Like, we've all experienced that. We've all been kicked there. You're down for 30 seconds or so. You catch your breath, and then you're fine. Robert Williams looked like he couldn't move and was out for two possessions. So there were two yesterday that you just thought, all right, if this is how it's going to go, I don't know what to expect. And I guess we should point out, I think the one area where the Celtics can get a lot of favor here is when this series shifts to Milwaukee, because Marcus Smart, how much of it was acting, I saw a lot of Bucks fans pointing that out. But I'm sure he was genuinely banged up because of how Drew Holiday played him. And Robert Williams, I guess the same there, and plus he's coming off that meniscus issue. This is going to favor the Celtics more than it does the Bucks when the series shifts to Milwaukee, because you get 3 days off between games 2 and 3. That's going to help short-term injuries. Not so much Chris Middleton, who you have to assume is out for the duration of this series. So that's where the Celtics could kind of catch a pretty big break Saturday when the series shifts back to Milwaukee.
Well, it would be a kick in the groin if you weren't able to join us to talk Bucks. So we appreciate that you make time for us. Thanks, buddy.
All right, see you guys.
Marcus Smart with a wicked shoulder stinger.
What would you say about Robert Williams' injury in your Boston accent?
Robert Williams got kicked in the nuts.
Mo Nelly with Boston Jesse next. It's Wilde and Tausch.